Blog Talk Radio.
The following program contains material which may be considered offensive to some listeners and outright disturbing to others. The views, opinions, positions, or strategies expressed in this program are solely the thought property of Art Underground, who accepts no liability for the content of this program or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. This program will contain strong language, pervasive writing, thematic elements, moral turpitude, and general insanity. Listening to the program may or may not induce and or cause headaches, migraines, difficulty breathing, bleeding of the nose, mild antisocial personality disorder, failing faith in humanity syndrome, temporary blindness, sudden panic attacks, confusion, rapid pulse, dizziness, hissy fits, loss of appetite, and may even induce fits of rage. And while listener discretion is advised, the host is apathetic, unconcerned, and uninterested with any of the above problems that you may experience. We simply could not give less of a shit if we tried to. Enjoy!
There's a storm coming. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You damn well better be. This storm here, she ain't nothing like you've ever seen before. So grab hold of your bootstraps and hold on tight. This is gonna be one bumpy damn ride.
Good evening and welcome, everyone. This is American Renegade. I'm your host, Art Underground. It is May 15th, 2020. We're halfway through the month. And before we get to our topic for this evening, I thought it was interesting. I was reading an article. As states push ahead with reopening, the CDC warns coronavirus cases and deaths are set to soar as nearly half of the United States begins to ease restrictions that were put in place to slow the spread of the coronavirus. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention is quietly projecting a stark rise in the number of new cases of the virus and deaths from it over the next month. Now, this was an article that was published on May 4th. And sadly, I'm just now getting to it. I've had it in my queue for, well, since the day it came out. But what I find interesting is this article was put out on the 4th, was published on the 4th. And, you know, Texas is seeing a dramatic drop in cases across their state. But everybody keeps wanting to talk about Georgia as if Georgia is the state to be watching. And I'm kind of proud of that because, well, I happen to live in Georgia. And I'm about 2 hours east of Atlanta. I'm exactly halfway between Augusta and Athens. So for those of you who know the Georgia layout, the geography of Georgia, if I say I'm halfway exactly, literally, I'm not kidding you, 48 miles from Augusta, 48 miles from Athens. That puts me exactly halfway between the two of them. And so I get to watch the numbers. And Lincoln County, which is the county over from us, they've had, Lincoln County had 12 cases so far, zero deaths, five of them had to be hospitalized. Wilkes County, which is my county, had 28 cases, 6 hospitalizations, but we've only had one death. McDuffie County, which is directly south of me, had 50, so far, this is all together total since all of this began, 53 cases involving 16 hospitalizations and 4 deaths. And directly north of me in Elbert County, 46 cases, 5 hospitalizations, 0 deaths. But if you look at our map and you actually follow the legend here, which is all color-coded. The red, there's only one red. Everything else is, there's one single white, and then there's four shades of blue going from light to dark, and then a shade of red. And a shade of red means they're anywhere from 2,400 to 3,265. And in Gwinnett County, which is outside, which is part of the Atlanta metro area, 2,597 cases, 471 hospitalizations, 101 deaths. Fulton County, 3,703 cases, 690 hospitalizations, 164 deaths. And DeKalb County, 2,751 cases, 496 hospitalizations, and 80 deaths. Interesting, Atlanta, our most populous city, also some consider it to be the crotch. They say Savannah is like the armpit of Georgia, and Atlanta is like the crotch. So you figure that one out. But down around Savannah, I mean, we're talking Chatham County, 353 cases, 91 hospitalizations, 14 deaths. That's not too shabby. That's not bad. Considering Savannah is a major, major town, a major city. So, you know, we had the CDC on what was that? Where is it again? Let me find it. On May 4th, which was about a week, about 11 days ago, telling us that as states open, we're going to see skyrocketing cases of, well, if we go to May 2nd, which was the beginning of Georgia's 14, what they call the 14-day window, we had 319 confirmed cases. Now, here we are on May 15th, 14 days later, 23 cases. What happened to that skyrocketing we were supposed to get? Also, they're talking about, you know, how there's all this increased amount of testing going on. Well, you would think the CDC is to be believed, which we even have Dr. Birx now coming out saying there's nothing coming out of the CDC that I can find trustworthy or believable. So that kind of does a little something to Dr. Fauci's credibility there, you know. You know, if we're to believe the CDC, then the more testing going on, the more positive confirmed cases we should get, right? But it's just the opposite. The more testing they do, the lower the number's getting, which means the lower the mortality rate is getting, which leads one to believe that the theory, which now is beginning to look like a reality, that the actual numbers are 45 to 55 times higher than what we're being told, which brings the mortality rate down to 0.1%, which is exactly the same as, oh yeah, the seasonal flu. This is just too rich. Anyway, I want to get this. I don't want to get too more, you know, too deep into anything at the moment, because this clip that I'm going to play for you tonight, I promoted tonight's broadcast, and here was how I promoted tonight's broadcast. Go back a couple weeks ago. Or actually, I think more than a couple of weeks now, I think right somewhere near the 1st of April, I believe it was, when I began to lay out a timeline, and I said my working theory was that it was a working theory. And I was basing my theory, my working theory, that there, it's possible that the United States was complicit in the coronavirus outbreak. in some way or another. Well, I laid out a timeline. A few days ago, I had to add something to the timeline because I learned something new. So the timeline goes as follows. Between 2005 and 2012, 1,059 pathogens either escaped or were stolen directly from Fort Detrick, Maryland's bioweapons laboratory. In 2015, a research team at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, was doing research in trying to combine the DNA sequence of the coronavirus found in the horseshoe bat, which is known to inhabit the Wuhan, China area, or the Hubei province, which is where Wuhan, China is. But they were trying to combine the DNA sequence from the coronavirus found in the horseshoe bat from that part of China with a virus found in the backbone of another bat, another type of bat. This was in 2015. Now, I had to add, well, then we had a later edition. The first edition I made to that timeline was 2017, when I had learned that at a speech that Dr. Fauci had given at Georgetown University in 2017, in January of 2017, and I believe this was just before Donald Trump was inaugurated, he said that the new administration, that would be the Trump administration, was going to be dealing with a pandemic. This was in 2017, just before Trump's inauguration. Kind of makes you wonder. This is one of the main things that gave me cause to believe that the United States was somehow complicit. So that was in 2017. My latest addition to the timeline was upon discovering that in 2018, in May of 2018, I believe it was. In fact, actually, let me look. Let me double check here because I want to make sure I'm correct. Oh, come on, damn it. There we go. Right, May 15th, 2018, in Washington, D.C., there was a pandemic exercise called CLADEX, C-L-A-D-E space X, CLADEX. This was in May of 2018. This was my newest addition to the timeline, a full-on pandemic exercise. Then in 2019, in October, well, in June of 2019, June or July, Fort Detrick, Maryland's bioweapons lab was shut down for security reasons because of a lax in their security protocols. That was Fort Detrick, Maryland's bioweapons lab. Also in 2019, October, we had 300 U.S. military troops went to Wuhan, China to engage in the military equivalent of the Olympics. In the same area, of Wuhan as the bioweapons lab and the virology lab, which are only a couple miles apart on the same road. Oddly enough, during this time period, the reports indicate that a couple of the U.S. military personnel wound up in the hospital with odd flu, odd pneumonia-like symptoms. They recovered, returned home, were tested, everything was fine. So no one questioned it. At the same time, also in October, in either D.C. or New York, there's a little bit of debate going on here as to where it was, but there was the Event 201 global pandemic exercise going on right around the same time as the military Olympics in October. Now, another thing that we learned was that Bill Gates, the Gates Foundation, and Dr. Fauci were directly involved in the virology lab of Wuhan, China, and their coronavirus testing with respect to funding and research. Very interesting. Also, we learned in December, the U.S. military was reported to have taken control of the research going on at the virology lab in Wuhan, China. Another interesting turn. Now, with all of that, I am led to believe, without any doubt in my mind, the United States, if not directly involved, is still complicit in this outbreak. And it appears that this may have actually been intended, meaning intentional, meaning planned, meaning staged event, not false flag. I've talked about false flags before. False flags never happen. The Gulf of Tonkin event, it never happened. It was a false flag. The World Trade Center actually did happen. That was a staged event. Oklahoma City actually did happen. That was a staged event. You see where I'm going. So this does look like quite possibly a staged event. Intentional. Now, I'm going to play a 32-minute clip. Need to get to this right now. This clip is called Butterfly of the Week. And just while this is playing, I'll look up the fellow's name and the website so you can go and look at his research and all of this stuff yourself. But this is entitled Under House Arrest as a Result of a Crime Committed by the CDC. This clip validates everything I've been saying for the past month. Here it is. 32 minutes.
Hello, everybody. It is 5 p.m., Monday, April 27th, and we are in for our next installment of Butterfly of the Week. And as always, producing this episode is Kim.
Me. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Glad you could join us. Today, of course, is going to be amazing, as they always are. Please send your questions in and we'll get them answered and enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Today, people, I look a little different. And that is because in the past, when I have done the investigations that ultimately give rise to legal actions that I have succeeded bringing against a number of entities around the world, I think it's appropriate that we have a certain decorum about how we engage when we are actually making very serious and very contemplated allegations in this case and reporting on some criminal activity. And as a result of this, this video is also going to be submitted to a number of U.S. attorneys, to the Attorney General, to other law enforcement agencies, and as a result, and in honor and respect for their roles and their posts, I think it's appropriate that we bring an appropriate level of decorum to the process. The second thing is, I have some notes here, and the reason I have notes is because I'm going to make very precise statements, and these statements are not things to take lightly. They are actually extremely serious. They are allegations, and they are allegations that are based on the facts that I'm going to be presenting. As a result of that, you're going to see me look at my notes because I take this matter very, very seriously. I need to set the stage for where we're going. At the end of this, I'm going to make a series of allegations of violations of both the United States Constitution, a series of civil and criminal acts that have been engaged around the entire COVID-19 pandemic fear-mongering and scare tactics. And I'm going to be specific in naming individuals and organizations that are at least implicated, if not directly involved, in the conspiracy that I'm laying out. So let's set the stage a little bit with some laws that are not necessarily commonly known. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the United States Constitution, and as it is manifest in the 35 U.S. Code, is the law that gives rise to intellectual property, the right for somebody, an inventor or an author, to have access to their inventions for a period of time for commercial exploitation. That is a constitutional right granted under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the United States Constitution. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, is an interesting clause that you don't hear about very much, but it's actually something that is a presumption not only in the United States Constitution, but in most of the civilized world, and that is the writ of habeas corpus. Now, what does habeas corpus mean? That means that there is a recourse in the law when someone has been placed in confinement, and when that confinement is either unjustified or inappropriate. Habeas corpus under the Constitution, under Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, cannot be suspended, and it cannot be suspended in the absolute sense of this. This, by the way, is something that is alluded to in Attorney General William Barr's memo dated today, released just a few hours ago. Now, those are constitutional provisions. What I'm also going to lay out are two very important other provisions that come out of the turn of the last century, most of them in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And those two provisions are called the Sherman Act, which is 15 U.S. Code Section 1 and following, and the Sherman Act, which was amended with a thing called the Clayton Act in 1914. And I just want to make reference to three provisions inside of the Sherman and Clayton Act. Combined, these represent what's called the Antitrust Acts of the United States. 15 U.S. Code Section 1 actually makes it illegal for anything that is a conspiracy and restraint of trade or commerce among the states with or with foreign nations, and any of those actions are declared illegal. Every person who shall make a contract or engage in a combination or conspiracy is declared to be illegal and shall be deemed guilty of a felony. And I made reference to the fact that this is criminal and civil allegations. The criminal allegations are given rise from the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act. 15 U.S. Code Section Section 2 talks about a violation of monopolizing trade. And this says every person who shall monopolize or attempt to monopolize or combine or conspire with any other person or persons to monopolize any part of trade or commerce among the several states or with foreign nations shall be deemed guilty of a felony. And once again, this is a criminal violation, and the penalty shall be not exceeding $100 million if a corporation or if a person $1 million. The third provision that I want to give rise to with respect to the Antitrust Acts is a thing in Section 19 called interlocking directorates and officers. And specifically, I just want to make reference to this. No person shall at any time serve as a director or officer in any two corporations engaged in whole or in part in commerce and by virtue of their business or location of operation, competitors, so that the elimination of competition by agreement would constitute a violation of any antitrust law. Now, those five provisions, two acts of the Constitution, which give rise to all kinds of cures in both civil matters and otherwise, and the Sherman Act, which are actually criminal acts, are very important to set the stage for what happened. On April 25th, 2003, the United States Center for Disease Control broke the law. They broke 35 U.S. Code Section 101 in the filing of a patent entitled Coronavirus Isolated from Humans. Under Section 101 of 35 U.S. Code, the patenting of a substance of nature is illegal. This was confirmed, by the way, in a Supreme Court case with which we were affiliated in 2013 against Myriad Genetics. And the Supreme Court ruled in their affirmation of this that it is illegal to have a patent on a human gene. The Center for Disease Control, April 25, 2003, filed a patent for and ultimately received United States Patent 7776521. And I need to make a very specific reference to the fact that in claims 3 and 4, the method of detecting SARS virus and a kit for the detection of SARS virus was granted with no limitation, particularly claim 4, which reads, a kit for detecting a severe acute respiratory syndrome-associated coronavirus in a sample. That's as broad as you get. They received a patent that restricted anyone anywhere in the United States from engaging in any activity using this. Now, from April 2003 and following, the CDC owned not only SARS, but they owned the kit to detect SARS. Its ability to be detected, its ability to manufacture kits, and during that 15-year period, the effect of this grant, which was ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, meant that commercial exploitation or any research involving the commercial exploitation of the virus or any kit to detect the virus would have been an infringement of the CDC patent and therefore an infringement giving rise to CDC's actions were it not for the fact that CDC's patent and their maintenance thereof is actually illegal. CDC and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, led by Anthony Fauci, that's right, the Dr. Fauci that you hear, entered into trade among states, including but not limited to a corporation called EcoHealth Alliance Incorporated, and with foreign governments and foreign entities in direct violation of the Sherman Act provisions, specifically the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the Chinese Academy of Sciences, through a 2004 National Institutes of Health grant, RO1AI110964. That constitutes commercial activity involving an illegal asset entered into interstate and international commerce in violation of the Sherman Act. The CDC and NIAID also entered into a commercial engagement with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, which is obviously interstate, and with foreign nations, specifically the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the Chinese Academy of Sciences, with Dr. Ralph S. Barrick of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Dr. Zheng Li Shi, the head of the research component of the project that included not only the Wuhan Institute of Virology, but the National Natural Science Foundation of China. CDC and the NIAID entered into trade among states in addition, which gave rise not only to a constructive infringement, unless there was another undisclosed agreement, on the patent that was held by CDC with the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and with foreign nations to conduct chimeric construction of novel coronavirus material with specific virulence properties prior to, during, and following the determination made by the National Institute of Health on October 17, 2014, that this work was not sufficiently vetted for biosecurity and safety standards. Further, it is presumed, and this is a presumption, please make the clear distinction, this is a presumption, that the CDC and its associates were A, fully aware of the work being performed using their patented technology, B, entered into explicit or implicit agreements including licensing or other consideration, and we know there's other consideration because we know the amounts of the grants that were exchanged, and C, willfully engaged one or more foreign interests to carry forward the exploitation of their proprietary technology after the United States Supreme Court rendered that technology and the proprietary rights to that technology illegal under their 2013 determination. Now, it's interesting to note that in January 2018, the U.S. Embassy reportedly sent two individuals to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and in their examination found that a number of individuals and parts of the laboratory procedure were not in compliance with safe operating procedures for the level of severity of the biohazards within that laboratory. The Washington Post reported that a cable dated the 19th of January 2018 confirmed that there was, and I quote, during interactions with scientists at the WIV laboratory, they noted that the new lab has serious shortage of appropriately trained technicians and investigators needed to safely operate this high containment laboratory. A year later, in June 2019, the CDC conducted an inspection of Fort Detrick, U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, or U.S. AMRID, and ordered it closed after what appears to be the same violations. And this is actually quite critical, because the Center for Disease Control shut down a laboratory for the very same argument that was made when the State Department and embassy staff reportedly found the same or similar violations at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. As those information with respect to the Fort Detrick investigation are not clearly available, all we can assume is that CDC selectively and capriciously closed one lab and let another with similar violations that also had a financial interest in their activities to continue. Now, here's where it gets a little messy, folks, because CDC reported the first SARS-CoV case in January 2020. And according to the CDC's own Epidemic Intelligence Service, by the end of January to the 1st or 2nd of February, there were 650 clinical cases and what they report to be 210 tests performed. Now just stop for a minute and ask yourself the question. If the test, which reportedly was not approved by the FDA for emergency use, remember, for emergency use, was not approved until the 4th of February, how is it that in late January, allegedly the CDC had already allegedly conducted 210 tests on alleged cases of coronavirus infection in the United States? Given that the suspected pathogen was first implicated in official reports on December 31st, 2019, and only isolated within that very short period of time between December 31st and the early part of January, one can only conclude that the CDC had the mechanism and the wherewithal to conduct tests to confirm the existence of a novel coronavirus, did not have the mechanism, but falsely reported the information, and it certainly tests credulity of both the World Health Organization and the CDC that they could manufacture before anyone even knew this virus existed and had not clarified it in any form of genomic testing, that they had tests for 210 tests before any emergency use authorization was granted. Did the CDC have the test? Did they not have the test? Why doesn't the world have the test? The world doesn't have the test because from 2003 until today, the CDC illegally held, maintained, and controlled an illegal patent on both the virus and on the test that would be required to detect its presence. The reason why you can be told there is a novel coronavirus and the reason why there is no way to empirically validate whether there actually is SARS-CoV-2 or not is because the CDC maintained an illegal monopoly, restrained trade, and violated both the Sherman and the Clayton Act in their business practices with both domestic and foreign operators. Around March 12th, and this date becomes exceptionally important to the last comment I'm going to make. Around March 12th, 2020, in an effort to enrich their own economic interests by way of securing additional funding from both federal and foundation actors, the CDC and NIAID, Dr. Fauci, elected to suspend testing as a requirement to classify a patient with COVID-19. Now, March 12th is really important. Not surprisingly, as there was a drop in reported cases, the liberalization of what constituted a suspected or presumptive positive case needed to be created to incite fear and to prop up the fear of a pandemic, which was never capable of being independently verified because of an illegal action taken by the Center for Disease Control. The CDC and the WHO elected to commit to a narrative of a novel coronavirus. And remember, they had the only ability to do so. They patented the compound of nature illegally And then they held the patent on the test for that compound. There was no way to independently verify this. Further, they participated in exhibiting properties of virulence that include the ACE2 receptor and other spike protein properties, which are the subject of U.S. patent 7618802, issued to the University of North Carolina's own Ralph Baric. And in the absence of testing protocols, all of them elected to insist that SARS-CoV-2 was a novel pathogen responsible for conditions that, and I'm quoting, were consistent with moderate to severe acute respiratory syndrome and pneumonia. You heard me correctly. And the reason why that last statement is so important is because as of today, there are still, with all of the liberal definitions of what counts as a COVID patient, there are still more cases since March the 12th of pneumonia of an idiopathic origin, meaning a pneumonia that comes from a pathogen we don't know. There are still more cases of pneumonia with an idiopathic origin than there are COVID cases by over 5,000. And for those of you who like to go into the CDC webpage and do the gotcha moment on, well, but there's a reporting glitch, the problem is the reporting glitch lives in both sets of data, in both sets of data. And the pneumonia numbers still outstrip the COVID numbers by over 5,000 as of today. There is no question that on February 17th, 2014, when the Center for Disease Control paid your tax dollars to renew a patent that was declared illegal by the United States Supreme Court in June 2013, almost a year apart, when they renewed their illegal patent on February 17, 2014, the Center for Disease Control violated Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the United States Constitution. By renewing their illegal patent on February 17, 2014, the CDC willfully violated the law using public funds in light of a Supreme Court ruling that actually had declared their actions illegal on June 13, 2013. With respect to Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, the protection of habeas corpus, Governor Gavin Newsom in California, under Executive Order N3320 based the declaration of a state of emergency and the ultimate restriction of civil liberties on, and I quote, the threat of COVID-19. There is no constitutional protection. And by the way, if you go and look at the Juho case in San Francisco, during the previous pandemic litigation in the Supreme Court, you'll realize that there is no protection that has ever afforded a governor in any state the right to suspend civil liberties on the threat of a thing, particularly when that threat has not been given the opportunity to be examined. No background of the underlying supporting science has been verifiable, and in this particular case, could not be verified without infringing the CDC's patent or without their collusion. Fox guarding the hen house? Absolutely. And Governor Newsom's order, by stating that it is under the threat without any confirmed serology or confirmed immunologic evidence, violated not only his rights under Government Code Sections 8567, 8627, and 8655, which, by the way, never give anybody the right to declare an emergency based on merely an unsubstantiated threat. At the time of that declaration, neither the CDC nor the WHO had sufficient testing in place to confirm or isolate the novel coronavirus. California did not have pathology data to suggest that the epidemic was even imminent. And the rest of the United States was incapable of making any such assessment because of the aforementioned actions of the conspiring parties. Let me make this point abundantly clear. To date, there is no clinical data showing that the restraint of healthy individuals, also known as social distancing, has any empirical data supporting its use. If you look at the University of Washington, Johns Hopkins, and Imperial College models, not a single one of them mandates entire lockdown of a healthy population. The most aggressive assumptions under social distancing are set forth to be a workplace reduction of about a reduction of 50%. But in no model, in no scientific document, in no place at all has there ever been validation that quarantining a healthy population has any merit in science. Governor Newsom, followed by another 42 governors, decided unilaterally to take propaganda rather than science and turn it into public policy. This directly violates the constitutional protections of the United States. The Sherman Act and the Clayton Act were violated with all the events that were mentioned above, and the collusion around the CDC patent, because they had the exclusive restrictive right both on studying the virus and on building any diagnostic kits, are self-evident and argued under the Sherman and the Clayton Act. Now, I told you that there was going to be another piece, that 15 U.S. Code Section 19, which is the prohibition of interlocking directorates. I just want to read into the record the fact that Dr. Fauci is on the leadership council of the Bill and Melinda Gates Global Vaccine Action Plan. Now, that is public information, whether he still maintains that position or not. He certainly was in the role he was at NIAID at the time he was given this appointment. And Leah Devlin, who is on the CDC Foundation board, is also on the faculty of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. These two individuals should be subject to further investigation under 15 U.S. Code Section 19 for the prohibition of interlocking directorates. Now, I told you March 12th was an important date. For those of you who don't follow the news very closely, the Patriot Act, which many, many, many people really found to be odious and offensive, was renewed by Congress until March 15th, 2020. That means that all of Dr. Fauci's nonsense, all the CDC behavior, all of the crap that we have been going through with respect to all of the lockdowns and the suspension of civil rights was in fact going on before the Patriot Act expired on March 15th, 2020. Just as a point of reference, remember Gavin Newsom's order came out on March the 4th, 2020. Under Section 802 of the Patriot Act says that domestic terrorism is a person engaging in domestic terrorism if they do an act that is, and I quote, dangerous to human life, that is a violation of criminal laws of a state or of the United States, and if the act is intended to, one, intimidate or coerce a civilian population, and two, influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. I am submitting to you right now that Dr. Fauci, the Center for Disease Control, and their co-conspiring governors have in fact violated the domestic terrorism provision under the Patriot Act, and anyone who instituted a lockdown order based on fallacious, subjective, and capricious determinations prior to the 15th of March did so in explicit violation of the Patriot Act, Section 802. Now, that is a serious allegation. And that's a serious allegation because this matter is serious. We went 17 years, ladies and gentlemen, we went 17 years during which the Center for Disease Control colluded and restricted the ability for anyone to get normative data on the presence or prevalence of coronavirus infection. The reason we don't know whether there is actually a COVID-19 event or, as the data that has been reported recently by Reuters and others might suggest, which is that coronavirus has been circulating the population with asymptomatic carriers in the majority, up to 96% of people testing positive for coronavirus. And remember, these are people testing positive. Up to 96% of them are asymptomatic. We have no evidence to suggest that we are in the midst of a pandemic. We have only, because of the collusive behavior of CDC, which restricted the development of tests, we only have been testing for this virus since February of 2020. For 17 years, we could have had this information, and we don't have it because of a criminal conspiracy. Now, this is not a theory. Every piece of information is independently verified. Every piece of information has been presented and is documented. And if you have an interest in asking me the question, which I get asked all the time, but Dave, what can we do? At the end of the file that I have presented that goes along with this particular presentation that's available in PDF, and it's also available tomorrow on YouTube, I have actually written a template letter, which I sent to the American Civil Liberties Union and to a number of U.S. attorneys and to a number of attorney general outposts and to the Office of Inspector General and to a number of media outlets. I have given you a template letter that you can copy, substitute your state, substitute your province, your country, and submit the exact same letter. This is not a, oh my God, this is too big, how can we potentially do anything about this? This is a your get off your ass moment. Get up and do something. If you want to stand as a patriot for liberty, do it. But whatever you do, I am not interested in engaging conversations about beliefs. And I'm going to speak directly to the people who have been making comments about face masks and social distancing and everything else. Until you have read the science, by the way, which I have made copiously available, and these are not my publications, these are not my opinions, this is not science I published. This is science coming from the mainstream medical science establishment. Until you have actually read the articles, I need you to shut up about your opinions on whether or not you're making grandma healthy or safe or not. The fact of the matter is, every person I have seen parroting the social distancing and the mask narrative has yet to evidence a single evidence that they have actually read the studies upon which their recommendations are being made. And parroting propaganda is actually not patriotic. It's lazy, it's pathetic, and it's the reason why we have our rights suspended. So don't do it. I'm passionate about this, people. But guess what? I was alone, passionate, when the Prince of Liechtenstein decided to use illegal patents to shut down the rice trade in India. I was alone with all the NGOs running for cover when Starbucks tried to squeeze Ethiopia for Yirgacheffe and Hararcheffe, the only two natural cultivars of coffee that are naturally decaffeinated. I was the only one to stand against that tide. And the reason I'm passionate is because this time I'm watching friends, I'm watching family, I'm watching communities across the world fall for idiocy, where public sector officials are promoting a conspiracy which is not a theory. It is a violation of five provisions of the United States laws. And it is not acceptable to allow a criminal conspiracy to go on and sit quietly and let the sheep be sent to the abattoir. That's why I'm passionate. Get off your butt, take that last little piece of the information at the end of the video, and don't freaking go march with a gun. Don't go do stupid things which do absolutely nothing but inflame. Don't do that. Do something that can and will make a difference. Let your voice be heard, not so that you get on the news tonight. Let your voice be heard so that elected officials understand that you're watching and you're willing to hold them accountable. I did it. You can do it too. And join me in the fight for liberty. There you go. That's it. I'll see you next week.
Okay, so everything I have said, I see bringing it, boy, in the chat. Boy, your timing really sucks because we're at the end of the broadcast. You have got to go back when this is over, listen to the archive, because I just got done playing a 32-minute clip of David Martin validating everything I have said since this whole coronavirus bullshit started. The timeline that I gave, including the additions that I had to make as I learned new things, all validated in this clip. The links in the link in the clip to the YouTube, that's the YouTube page where you can find the clip that I just played. In the, what do they call that down below, the comments, the description or whatever you want to call it, where you click show more and it shows all whatever they put. David provides you links to all of the documentation to which he refers. I said in the beginning, when I first began to put the timeline together, it was a working theory that the United States was complicit. It's no longer a theory. It is now a criminal conspiracy. And if there is any justice here in the United States, heads should roll, because this evidence puts the CDC, the World Health Organization, Dr. Fauci, and a whole host of others in the hot seat for their complicity in this matter. This clip validates everything I have said from the beginning. Thank you, David Martin. His website, davidmartin.world, D-A-V-I-D-M-A-R-T-I-N, davidmartin.world. And again, I'll post all of this. I'll go back after the broadcast is over with and after the archives have posted. I'll go back and I will put all of these links and everything in the broadcast description, so you can actually go read the PDFs for yourself. Do what Dr. Martin says. Read the science. Read the documentation. It is all there. And read his notes, his particular notes where he gets into the codes and the laws that were violated and the constitutional violations that took place. Absolutely astounding. If there's any justice in the United States, heads should freaking roll. All right. Sunday. I'm very disappointed. No one has contacted me yet on the roundtable beginning this Sunday, which tells me either one, nobody has gone and watched the Clade X videos, or two, no one gives a shit. And if it's number two or number one, doesn't matter. Why the fuck am I doing this? What the hell am I wasting my time for? I look at the stats. I know people are listening to the archives. So there's no excuses why no one wants to be a part of this. Go watch the four-part exercise. You can find it on YouTube. Clade X, C-L-A-D-E space X, Clade X. After you watch it, give some serious consideration in participating in the roundtable beginning this Sunday on Spreaker. It's 3 hours. We can have a hell of a discussion. 1 hour to play the clip, 2 hours to talk about it. And then email me, the number one, AmericanRenegade@gmail.com. Tell me you want to be a part of the roundtable. We'll make it happen. But you got to have Skype, and you're going to have to email me your Skype ID so I can add you in and send you a request so you can accept it. and we can bring you on board. And we can have a real honest discussion here. I'm also trying to get a couple of my buddies who do talk radio as well, Farron Shove, Vicki Davis, Darren Weeks, Steve O'Brien. But who knows? We'll have to see what happens. Watch the four-part series. Email me, One American Renegade. That's the number one, oneamericanrenegade@gmail.com. Tell me you want to be a part of the roundtable. Participate. This is not a spectator sport. I do this for audience participation. So I got enough time to do this. Spreaker.com, the channel, Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. on Pacific. Me, American Renegade with Art Underground. Me, 3 hours. I got a big mouth and I can talk for 3 hours if you don't want to be a part. Not a problem. Tuesday, Suzette Live Talk, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Wednesday night instrumentals with Art, karaoke style music. No words, just the music. Thursday, RZ's Thursday Tunes, playing some badass music. RZ cuts loose, doing his little DJ thing. Friday, Smokey. Spend the night with Smokey as he plays some of his favorite tunes for you. And then Saturday, RZ's Free Speech Zone. Look out, because here he comes. I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. Hope it's been informative and insightful. Till next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, no matter how hard they work to intimidate you, don't ever be afraid to stand up, speak out, let your voice be heard. Till next time, I'm Art Underground for American Renegade. Be safe out there. Now you're gonna make it, you're free.